Spin 103.8. You're welcome back to Spin Talk Live at Seminar at the RDS. And what a great day we're having. So many wonderful guests coming to join us fresh from the stage. And from what we've heard from the crowd, the talks are just going so well. The audience is absolutely captivated. There's a huge crowd here again at the RDS today. You can pop over to us at the Spin Hub. We'd love to meet you. I'm joined now by Dr. Harry Barry, who I mentioned earlier, is a senior GP with 35 years experience in the Irish health sector, and he's the best-selling author for his Flagging series. The first one was Flagging the Problem, published in 2007. Dr. Barry, you're very welcome to Spin Talk. Thanks for coming along. Talk to me a bit about back in 2007 and flagging that problem of social anxiety. Did people talk as much about social anxiety
back
then?
Back in 2007, believe me, when I wrote these books initially, our understanding of mental health was very, very, very poor. We didn't talk about things like panic attacks. We didn't talk about social anxiety or depression. So I literally have written a series of about six books during that time right up to now, with the most recent being Anxiety and Panic, which was really written in total frustration at how poorly we as a nation understand the whole world of anxiety, particularly things like panic attacks and social anxiety. These are conditions that are so easily treatable, and yet so many people will go through years and years of torment because nobody's teaching them the skills as to what to do.
Well, I mentioned to you off air that any time we talk about panic attacks, social anxiety, we get so many messages in from people because it is something that so many people are living with.
Absolutely.
And are embarrassed by. Why do you think that is?
Well, you see, as human beings, we all hate to be embarrassed. We hate that feeling of being embarrassed. And which one will we do? Will we do panic attacks first?
Let's go with panic attacks first. For someone who's never had a panic attack, describe to me what is happening.
Yeah. Imagine that you're sitting down at home. Imagine you're 15, 16, you're sitting down doing your studies or maybe out with friends or something like that, and suddenly you find your heart goes fast, and then suddenly you're breathing quicker, and then suddenly you're shaking and you're sweating and your heart's going even faster, and your stomach goes into knots and your muscles are tense and you feel weak and you feel dizzy and you think you're going to die. You think, my God, something awful is going to happen.
I'm having a heart attack.
There's this terrible sense of dread. Something dreadful is going to happen. And, of course, the more you try to stop it, the worse it gets. So it can often last, if the person continues to try to stop it, for anything up to 30 minutes, 40 minutes. And then sometimes what happens is the person is brought to the hospital, to the A&E, because everyone thinks they're having a heart attack. Mm-hmm. And then they're told there's nothing wrong. Or they go along to their doctor who examines them and says, no, there's nothing wrong. You're just a bit anxious. And of course, the person now is feeling even more frightened because this happened out of nowhere. There was no reason for it. They weren't particularly worried about anything. And now their worry is that, God, it's going to happen again. So the more anxious it becomes that it's going to happen again, the more it triggers another one. And then suddenly it happens another week later and another week later. And suddenly I'm terrified as to, when is it going to happen next? And that's the world of panic disorder, where we're worried about getting a panic attack after panic attack after panic attack.
And it can just have such a negative effect then on your mental health.
Absolutely.
And your relationships. You might feel like you can't go to work or to
Absolutely.
School anymore.
And some young people will self-harm. They'll start cutting themselves because nobody's taught them what to do, and they get so distressed by them that they self-harm. So they can be very, very destructive.
You said to me before we came on air that we can treat panic attacks in just
Simply.
One session.
You can treat panic attacks in one or two sessions, and it's very, very simple. What I'm going to do is I'm going to explain what happens in a panic attack.
Okay.
And then I'm going to give you the name of the book and the website, because there's YouTube videos which young people would love to look at, which might be very helpful for many people with panic attacks.
Brilliant.
Okay. So all that happens in a panic attack is that there's a part of my brain, I'm going to just talk about our stress system. There's a part of our brain called the amygdala, which I call the gunslinger. And this guy is an ancient organ in your emotional brain whose job it is to look for danger. And when he sees danger, internally in your head or externally, he fires. And when he fires, he causes a rush of adrenaline to go into your bloodstream. And adrenaline is your fear hormone or your do-a-runner hormone. So I often tell young people about meeting a leopard in Africa at 3 a.m. And what happened was, before I even knew about it, I had frozen.
Okay.
And suddenly I was shaking, sweating, stomach in knots.
True story.
They shot the leopard the following day.
Oh my God.
So my stomach was in knots, I was shaking, I was sweating, I was breathing quickly, all the things that you get in a panic attack. And all that was happening was my gunslinger saw the leopard before I did. Then when I registered, it actually got me ready to run. because it has learned through millions of years of evolution that it's safer to run than fight a leopard. So but how it gets me to run is very important. If I breathe faster, I'll run quicker. If my heart's going quicker, I'll run faster. If my muscles are all tense, I'll run quicker. If the blood is taken out of my mouth, which goes dry, and sent to my muscles, I'll run faster. If it's taken out of my stomach and sent to my muscles, I run quicker. So it's getting me ready to run, which is what I did. Mm-hmm. So I ran back to the house. 10 minutes later, everything went back to normal. Why? Because the danger was gone. And that's how your stress system works. That's how the gunslinger works. So all that's happening in a panic attack, believe it or not, is I get an initial symptom of anxiety, like, say, my heart going slightly quick, or my breathing a bit faster, or my mouth dry, or something. And then I assign a danger to it. And the dangers are, there's four dangers that people worry about in a panic attack. I'm going to have a heart attack, stroke, collapse, or die. I'm going to lose control and do something crazy. I'm going to go mad, or people are going to see me. And it's always the same. And every person will have their own individual number of those. Some will have all four, and some will have... But the number one is the commonest, probably number one and two. So all that happens then is that my gunslinger has picked up my intern's sense of danger. And his job is to look for danger and fire. So the minute he fires, he gives you another adrenaline mm-hmm. release. And of course, the more you try to stop it, the more he fires again. And then you build it up and build it up and build it up.
Because none of these dangers are real.
No.
So how can you train your brain?
Well, the first thing, as I said to do, well, look at what happened when I saw the leopard. If, for example, I saw the leopard and I dropped dead, would that be a very useful stress system?
No. No.
If, for example, I saw the leopard and stopped breathing, well, that wouldn't work very much either. If I saw the leopard and lost control, and ran up and down in front of the leopard, well, that wouldn't work either. So the secret is to understand that the job of my gunslinger and my stress system is to keep me safe, not harm me. So none of these things are dangerous. So we're back to the discomfort.
Right.
So all that we're left then is the discomfort. So I teach people the technique of flooding. And flooding is that we know now from both CBT and neuroscience that the gunslinger has the ability to change his memory, to turn down the switch. But we do this by, when we get a panic attack, to visualise you're stuck to the seat, and you visualise these symptoms flowing over you like a flood. And of course, once you do that, but don't assign a danger, mm-hmm. the gunslinger recognises you're no longer assigning a danger and begins to turn down. But more importantly, he changes his memory.
Okay. So the
so
next
each time you do
yes,
it, he changes his memory down. And after doing this 3 or 4 times, they're history.
So many of our listeners have spoken to us about CBT.
Yeah.
That's what this is retraining
your what I'm doing here now is why Anxiety and Panic was such a useful book was because for the first time I explained in detail what went on in your brain and your body. Mm-hmm. Because young people don't realise that panic attacks are physical. It's not the psychological thing, it's their physical.
Okay.
And since they don't realise what's causing them, they're terrified of them.
Yeah.
And once they know what they are, young people say, oh, that's all it is. So now I know what to do. And very quickly they deal with them.
We were talking ourselves this morning just about experiencing panic attacks. And once you've had one, you can recognise it coming again.
Yes.
But that can be very scary for a lot of people.
Yes, but if you accept that this is a great opportunity for me to use my techniques...
Mm-hmm.
So what I actually get people to do is go into situations where they're terrified they'll have a panic attack and try and bring them on.
Oh, I think, yeah.
And believe it or not, it's amazingly effective. Because what actually happens is, because they're no longer worried about what to do, they want to try out these techniques.
Yes.
They can't bring them on.
Really?
Yes.
So they're gone. The panic attacks are gone. We have a few questions coming in, Harry, because we were asking people to get in touch. This one says, hi, Lauren, could you please ask the doctor about chronic blushing? If there's anything he could suggest, it has a serious impact on my mental health, and I don't hear it discussed a lot. I would like to stay anonymous, but I would really appreciate it. Now, I can't pronounce the word for chronic blushing. It's erythropoia.
It doesn't make any difference.
It doesn't. It's chronic blushing.
Doesn't the slightest thing.
There's a fancy word for it, but anyway, chronic blushing.
All that happened is when we get anxious... You know, one of the things that happens is that we can actually end up blushing. However, what happens to a lot of us is we have an exaggerated view of how much we're actually blushing. So in our minds, we're blushing an awful lot. But what really matters is blushing is often associated with social anxiety. So maybe we might have a brief chat if we have time on social anxiety.
Yes, go for it. Yeah.
Social anxiety is where we actually go into social situations incredibly anxious. We believe when we go in there that people are going to see something about us that's going to make them think we're anxious. They're going to see us blushing, sweating, shaking,
yeah,
staying at the edge of groups, fidgety, or that we're very bad at conversation. And of course, I then begin to believe in my own mind, remember, this is what's going on in my head, I'm catastrophizing like this, that I believe that all the place is going to come to a standstill as everybody takes out their notebook and actually begins to assess,
yes.
Oh, I can see, I think I see a bit of blushing there, I think I see a little bit of sweating there. In reality, people see nothing.
No. Everyone is so wrapped up in themselves.
Exactly. So, believe it or not, what you have to teach the person is that what our perceptions in our head are not actually true in real life. So I give people these very fun-filled exercises to teach them that in real life. And we can get rid of social anxiety in 2 or 3 sessions. It's one of the easiest things in the world to get rid of. I said it at the talk here. We get rid of our social anxiety when we begin to understand that we're not as important as we think we are.
Yeah. Actually, we're going to speak to her tomorrow, is our own Darren Garrahy from the Zoo Crew. And her dad has a great expression. Now, I can't say it exactly how he says it, but she talks about it a lot on her social medias. And no one really gives an F about you.
Absolutely. But you see, everybody's obsessed. Everybody's actually living their own world in their own heads. So when you're out socialising, you're not looking around just saying...
No.
So here's a great exercise for you, for anybody out there who's got social anxiety. I want you, the next social occasion you're in, 7 to 10% of the people there will be socially anxious. So I want you to find them.
That's a good exercise. Yeah, and I'd love to hear back from people the
next
time.
You'll actually go out there and feedback to you, mm-hmm. and actually just recognise how hard it is to actually see whether somebody's physically anxious. And if you can't find them, well, how in God's name are they going to find you?
Yeah. Harry, great to have you on Spin Talk today. Thank you so much for your time and coming to join us straight from the stage. It's been a busy day for you. Dr. Harry Barry, Flagging the Problem was the first book. The entire series
Anxiety and Panic is the one that I would
Anxiety
I
and Panic.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So many of our listeners getting in touch. Peter says, fascinating listening to Dr. Harry. Really feel like I've learned a lot and will be able to cope better with panic attacks.
And the website, by the way, is drharrybarry.com.
Brilliant.
And there's loads of information on the books and on the YouTube videos telling you what to do.
Harry, thank you so much. Okay.